if none of the energy gets radiated, you see an impedance in the center of zero. Just the right amount gets radiated, so you see 73 ohms. So now, what the dipole really is doing is you've launched energy into it, and that energy is going to bounce back and forth 20 times before it gets radiated. Whether you feed it in the center, whether you feed it off the center, or you feed it in the outer end, as long as you get the right impedance match at where you're feeding it, the right balancing structure. Let me drop. As long as you get the right impedance match and the right balancing structure, it doesn't matter where you're feeding it. You're pouring energy into a flywheel. And whether you pour the energy in with a push rod that's near the center of the pivot point of the flywheel or out of the perimeter, that's your choice. But you're putting energy into a flywheel. And the energy is going to bounce back and forth until it finally gets radiated. And so, as long as the structure doing the radiation looks like it's a half wave, a quarter wave ground plane with an infinite sheet of metal, with the reflection in the sheet of metal of the other half, looks like a half wave. With your ground plane radial falling parallel to the radiator, it looks like a half wave. And so perfect radials out to infinity, a whole lot of them, that sheet of metal, that's a pure dipole pattern. All the way down is a pure dipole pattern. So at some other angle, you can see why I'm having trouble believing that there's a drastically different pattern. BE3ZT6K2LIW.
I hear you. We're maybe not quite on the same page because we're not talking about with ground plane radials anymore. We're talking about a stock dipole where there is the as it's called, the hot side, and then the counterpoise side. On a quarter over quarter, the current peaks low at the center, low at the tip, and high in the at the eighth wave point on the two sections, and the current is flowing in the same direction. It's flowing from tip to center on the counterpoise side. It's flowing from center to tip on the what's called the hot side on the RF cycle. You with me so far?
Yes, I am with you so far. But you're walking down a road that could get you in trouble if you call one side the hot side and one side the counterpoise. There is no hot side, there is no counterpoise side. A fully symmetric dipole, usually set in the center, each side is equally hot all the time. On each half cycle, there is no difference. Maybe that helps a little bit. Back to you, Scott, K2LIW.
Okay, yeah, I have that understanding. I think, my God, I guess, for using not drawing the word picture properly. But we're on the same page there. So now if you go to a half wave over half wave, the current flows now start to change. In terms of, they're traveling in the same direction, complementary to develop the same current bubble envelope. And so if you compare a half wave over half wave to, say, a quarter over three quarters, so an off fed center, where you get that coupling in the same direction again for the two lobes on the one side, and you get the same effect. Do you see where I'm going there?
Yes, I see where you're going there, and you got to be careful. That, again, can lead you astray. If I'm a smart guy building a half wave over a half wave, a vertically stacked collinear antenna, and if I'm smart enough, I make sure that the upper half dipole, the upper dipole, and the lower dipole are fed in phase with each other. That means that that narrow gap between the lower end of the upper one and the upper end of the lower dipole, that narrow gap is 180 degrees of phase shift. So if you feed the upper dipole in phase with the lower dipole, that is a vertical stacked collinear. It is a two-element interferometer. It now has a front side pattern that's about half or one third of the beam width, because you got a lot more real estate, co-phase real estate, you got a much more narrow main lobe, and you're going to have some side lobes. So that's the usual way of feeding a half wave over a half wave if I'm trying to get a vertical antenna to squirt the signal out to the horizon. If I make the lower antenna three-quarter wave, I now have the upper quarter wave being fed differently than if I feed a half wave over half wave with two separate transmission lines, two separate antennas. And by the way, you could, if you want to, take a half wave over a half wave and don't feed it with two separate transmission lines. Simply connect them together, tip to tip. They're now 180 degrees out of phase to each other. They now will have a perfect null on the horizon. So that three-quarter wave and quarter wave thing, you're moving in that direction. You're feeding it the wrong way, if you know what I mean. So you've got to be careful with that one, Scott. VE3, ZTZ, K2RIW.
These is a beer and a table and a pen and a napkin. I would enjoy that very much. I'll see if I can, I'll dig out the link for you and show your way so that we're on the same discussion page and see if, I guess, whether you agree with the YouTube that I was watching on this one that I thought cleared it up for me. Okay, let me try and ask it this way. I'm going to tip. So you have a half wave piece of aluminum rod and a half wave piece and another half wave piece of aluminum rod, and you take the braid as center fed, and you take the braid and you touch it to the left, and you take the center and you touch it to the right. Okay. Are you not, if you took those rods and ran them parallel with each other, you have a half wave open shorted stop, correct?
There was missing information there, Scott. You took the braid of the coax and put it to one half of the dipole, the center conductor of the coax to the other half of the dipole. You didn't say it, but I presume you did that to the upper half wave dipole and set the transmission line feeding in a similar manner the lower half wave dipole. Two separate transmission lines. And by the way, for this thing to be a pure experiment, that'll be a balancing structure there. Otherwise, there will be a significant amount of RF energy flowing down the outside of each of those coax cables. And that current flowing down the outside of the coax cable is a phasor radiator that's going to give you a very different pattern. The perfect balancing structure there, which means the coax cable looks like 50 ohm twin leads to the dipole. And you've got a separate coax cable to the upper half wave, separate coax cable to the lower half wave. The two of them are vertically stacked, collinear, and each of those coax cables goes back to an equal length of transmission line into a 2-to-1 power divider. That in turn goes back to the main transmission line to the transmitter. You now have a real vertical collinear full-wave antenna, a pair of half-waves stacked, and each one is fed in phase, and now you're going to get a beautiful pattern out to the horizon. And if you didn't do all that, or there's smart ways you can create a null on the horizon. VE3ZTZ, K2RIW of its net. Almost at net.
But I'm coming back to the ultra simple. So let's just say none of what you just said is true. So say you've got two pieces of wire, halfway length long, and you got them lying on the table parallel to each other. And the left one, let's try it this way, is right off the tip of the transistor, and the right one is off of the ground path for the transistor, so right on the PA. You've got a half wave open shorted stop, right?
Okay, now I'm getting a very different mental picture. I think you told me you've got a half wavelength of wire above another half wavelength of wire, and at the intersection between the two, you're putting a transistorized amplifier. And because the transistorized amplifier has two output connectors, one going to the upper wire, one going to the lower wire, wavelength long, therefore they're being fed out of phase, which is exactly the right way. Out of phase at the tip-to-tip intersection, but if you're feeding each one from center with two separate transmission lines, you would get the exact same result. So if the transistor doing the generating, if that's a gap between these two wires, and each wire is a half wave long, it's a full wave antenna set at the center, that now is a pair of collinear half wave dipoles. That's the right way to feed it. Stack that vertically and it'll have a beautiful pancake pattern and squirt most of its energy out to the horizon. Is that what you want to create, Justin Scott? Good antenna, BE3ZTZ, K2IOW.
Okay, we're getting there. So at the moment, the two wires are parallel to each other, just like a piece of zip cord. Okay. And it's just lying on your table. Okay. Now, if you peel the zip cord so the wires are no longer parallel, but end-to-end perpendicular, you've just created a dipole. That's a half wave over a half wave, correct?
You've recreated a dipole. Boy, you confused me with the word zip cord. I said quite a few times this, maybe I didn't make it clear, collinear. If I had a half-wave dipole laying on the table, and it's spaced from east to west, and the first half-wave dipole is on the eastern side of the table, the second half-wave dipole is on the western side of the table, and the two are collinear, I can draw one straight line across all of them. That's a half-wave dipole. That's a full-wave dipole set in the center. And it would give the results that I said. And when you start, when you started off with two dipoles parallel to each other like zip cords, that's not an antenna. That's a very elaborate transmission line. But when you opened up the zip cord and you created these two collinear dipoles, then you and I are back on the same page. Greg Scott, K2LIW.
Okay. With you. If we go back to the sort of zip cord where they're parallel to each other and set at the same end, of the table, right off the transmitter tip, that is a shorted, the half-wave shorted stop, right?
Negatory. The fancy thing about transmission lines is a quarter wave of transmission line is an impedance inverter. A half wave of transmission line is an impedance repeater. If I had a half wavelength of zip cord, open end at one end, and at the other end, two wires of the zip cord where they're close together, I tried to feed them, I will see an open circuit. Half wavelength of zip cord is a half wavelength transmission line. Half wavelength repeats impedance, doesn't do impedance inversion. The open at one end will be open at the end where you're putting the transistorized amplifier. And that, by the way, would be a very good impedance for when you unzip the zip cord, which I think is where you're going. BE3ZTZ, K2LIW.
That's exactly where I was going. And I thought, and this is, I guess, where my my misunderstanding is, that because of that perfect sort of null there, that's why half waves were difficult to match and work with, which was to the root of your question last week, why more people don't try these things. That's the short loop to all the research. V3ZTZ.
Yep. The half-wave dipole, we always feed it classically in the center. I'm saying it's time we start feeding it from the bottom end when it's vertically polarized. Doesn't matter. Exact same pattern. You're launching energy into a flywheel. It's a resonant structure. And whether you decide to put the energy in by way of the center insulator or put a short circuit there and feed the outer end, that's your choice. You get lots of advantages of feeding the bottom outer end of a vertical half-weighted dipole. Lots of advantages. The disadvantage is the impedance changes as you start moving off from the center. By the time you get out to the outer end, the resistive impedance is roughly 1,500 ohms. The Brown and Woodward curve will tell you that. That's told you can get the Brown and Woodward curves from that website called WA1MikeBravoAlpha.org or from almost any issue of the Antenna Engineering Handbook, Chapter 4. The Brown and Woodward curve will tell you that a half-wavelength radiator of on any reasonable diameter will have a resistive impedance of roughly 1,500 ohms and a reactance of almost zero, if you do it right. And now you need an impedance step-up between your, you need a 30-to-1 impedance step-up between your 50-ohm transmission line and your 1,500-ohm antenna. And one LC-L network with the right inductor-capacitor combination will do that impedance step-up for you beautifully, and it's a couple of dollars worth of parts. VE3ZTZ, K2LIW.
Yep, I see how it comes together. And I appreciate the extra effort here to help make that so. Just back to the point that I mentioned last week, and you restated it, is that in this there are configurations of wave up peak, not inside as you described, but there are configurations of it where you'll create nulls at the horizon, in which case the energy is going at 45 or steeper angles off the endpoints, which is the pattern that I had in my head when I said if it's not. I guess the misspeak was that if you don't get the impedance match, that affects the pattern. It's not, what I think I'm hearing you saying is that pattern from misconfiguring this has nothing to do with impedance, and that was a misspeak.
Yeah, I think we're getting there, Scott. Half-wave dipole fed from the end going to have the exact same pattern as a full wave, as a half-wave dipole fed from the center. It just looks a more convenient way to feed it, mechanically speaking, for the way things are arranged in my backyard with that tree I'm going to use as a support, or the tower I'm going to use as a support. And I want a vertical radiator. I don't want to waste the time putting down a whole bunch of ground plane radials. Now, that's a half-wave vertical radiator. If I was foolish enough to stack another half-wave on top, in other words, make it a full wavelength long piece of wire. One piece of wire, full wavelength long, vertically polarized, and I feed the bottom end of it. Impedance-wise, I'm in pretty good shape. It's going to be a little bit different than 1,500 ohms, but I can adjust for that. But the big problem is the upper half-wave dipole and the lower half-wave dipole with one continuous full wave of wire are out of phase with each other. The upper half wave and the lower half wave are out of phase. And just like you said, beautiful null horizon. And if now you want a vertical stack, half wave over half wave, you will create a gap between the two, and you do something to make sure that there's 180 degree phase reversal at that gap. Now the two are in phase with each other. Beautiful strong signal on the horizon. VE3ZTZ, K2LIW.
Yep, I've got you. We've sorry for making it painful. We arrived at the same point. Thank you very much. I thought that had something to do with the impedance mismatch, as opposed to the phase. That was my error. Apologies to for torturing the net with that. VE3ZTZ.
Don't worry, Scott. Both few hams. I don't think 0.1% of the hams that you and I can talk to have ever run a half wave or more dipole fed at the bottom. A few of us have run something a little bit similar to it, a 5/8 wave mag mount, 2-meter antenna or 440 antenna on the car. That's in the right vicinity, the 5/8 wave. But that's a little bit more than a half wave fed at the bottom with a great big impedance step up for coils in the bottom of that mag mount. But there's a lot to be said about a full half-wave, vertically fed, no ground plane radials required, tremendous efficiency, higher phase center, gets above the trees and the buildings a little bit better, lower angle of radiation toward the horizon, lots of advantages, and an easy way of feeding it once you recognize the impedance matching problem is nowhere near as bad as you think. It's a straw man with a couple of dollars worth of pot and an inductor and a capacitor. You can wind the inductor easily for a few cents, and the capacitor, if you're going to run some real power, the capacitor is going to be a transmitting type capacitor. There's going to be some voltage across that capacitor. And so, good luck with that antenna. And let me know when you start bombing these guys with this rock crusher of an antenna, Scott. E3ZTZ, K2LIW.
Yeah, well, we do have up here our club repeater. We have a VHF and a EHF repeat, and both of them are suffering from water in the hard line, and some testing some of the other club members did this weekend also show the antenna. It's a four bay four bay antenna that there's problems up there, so the club may need to look at a different antenna, and I'd love to look at a pair of half waves phased or something like that as a possibly cheap alternative. So this may get some traction up here, especially the UHF one where you've got a lot more latitude to be experimental. So I appreciate it, as always, but thanks again. And again, apologies for torturing the net. E3ZTZ.
Yeah, as I said, Scott, don't worry. This is an area easily misunderstood. And remember when I did go to the case of two half-waves vertically stacked. At the gap between the two, there's got to be 180-degree phase reversal if you want them to be, each half-wave to be in phase. When you build a station master antenna, you happen to stack a whole bunch of half-wave length pieces of hard line. At each intersection, you crisscross the center conductor and the shield. That's the 180-degree phase reversal. At each one of those half-wave chunks of hard line inside of your station master antenna, there is that phase reversal done by the crisscross of center conductor and shield. That's what makes it happen. That's how they all end up as half-waves all in phase with each other, and therefore squirting the signal out to the horizon as a pancake pattern. Bye-bye for now, Scott. See you down the log. E3ZTZ for a final, K2LIW.
Okay, K2LIW, thanks again. Have a great week. Safe, and catch you next Sunday. This is the E3ZTZ in Toronto. We'll be out. Downlinking your repeater. Just before I drop it, V3JW, Julie's India Whiskey. This is the E3ZTZ. Are you still on? Nothing here. V3ZTZ cleared.
John WS2N.
Hey, Paul. Oh, you're still alive. I just moved to change this mic cord over here. I want to make sure I have some audio.
Okay, very good. Well, I'm sitting that. I'm looking through the computer. They got four, I thought it was three, they got four docking ports on the Russian side and one on the American side. Wow.
I wonder what four. Why one for the Americans? You can see we had at least two. But, well, I can see two of them preoccupied when they have, when they're visiting. One is a spare and one is active. So then they have another one just in case. They have two more. Great information.
Yeah, the Russians got four, but two spaceships and like two Progresses if they want to. Or Progress on an ATV, you know, they have a more docking facility. So we had the two, but we're now we're down to one because you don't have the shuttle going up there anymore. So we just need the one. But we we could have two if we needed it, but we got one.
I was wondering, as you were speaking about the construction, can they pass through the space station with their space suit on and get into a vehicle, or no, they can't fit through the hatch?
Yeah, the spacesuits are stored in the different areas, like the Russians have the Pyrus and the Pyosk, they call it. They're basically little rooms right before they go out on a spacewalk. The Pyosk, the P-I-S-K-I, I think it is the, that's where they would go to do an EVA. They have spaces there. And then spacesuits at the Soyuz spacecraft, you know, if they need be, you know, inside the Soyuz spacecraft. And they used to have them, of course, you know, they really don't need it. I mean, if there's an emergency, they'll go right into the Soyuz spacecraft and just deorbit. They don't need a spacesuit.
So I was just wondering, if they had to walk through one of the chambers that was depressurized, could they don a spacesuit, walk through it, and then get into a vehicle? Is that possible?
Yeah, but not one area depressurized. You know, in other words, from one end to the other, you know, there's every different section is separated by a door, you know. They're left open all the time, but, I mean, if there was a problem at one end, they would just close it. You know, if there was a leak, they would isolate themselves on one side. So they would never have the spacesuits on inside the space station.
Okay. I was just wondering if they were able to get through the hatch to the vehicle with spacing on it, but I guess the way it's chambered up doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, right, mate. I mean, I tried to explain it, but it's hard to get it across. You know, pictures worth a thousand words, but if you lined up a half a dozen beer cans in a row, you know, a couple of soda cans in a row, you start at one end to the other, you know, you start with a... the Soyuz Vesta unit, you work your way forward, and then that connects to a module, a little tiny module in between, to the functioning with the Zarya. So now, that little piece in between, they have ports coming out of that, and one would have a port for a Progress spaceship, and the other one would have a port for, let's say, a Soyuz spaceship, and by that one that connects to the Soyuz is also the one that they use for EVAs on the Russian side. So now you go along, you got you start from one end, you got the Bethesda, the main Russian one, and then you got this little port in between, and then you got the which connects to these other docking ports. Now you go along that run, and then now you come to the functioning cargo block, the Zarya, they call it. That's got batteries and gyros and stuff. It's like a machine room. Let me drop it. Then you continue along, and you come to the next thing on the run would be the node. Interconnecting part. It's got six ports on it, you know. It's like if you took a dice, you know, you got six sides, so each one has a round connection to it. You can hook things to it, so you've got that hook, and you continue down a run, and then you got the American Destiny thing hooked to that. Then you got another node, the Harmony connected to that. And then you keep going along the run, and now you've got the PMA, pressure mating adapter. That's the American docking thing that you would dock the shuttle to or the Dragon to. So that's the whole run. And then if you want to go up to the side of that last that last node, the Hominy, when we drop, you come out of one side of the Hominy and you've got actually another node that they put in called Tranquility, another six-sided thing. And out of that, that's where you got the cupola. It's got like eight windows. I mean, it looks like the planetarium inside, you know. You know, you hang out, you look out down at Earth, you know. You've got all, you know, now coming out of all these different nodes, you've got other things coming out, you know, other modules, a big Columbia module, as big as the living room. Another one as big as, bigger than that, there's the Japanese one. You know, they all come out of the size of these things. The long one, that's the main one. Like a half a dozen cans in a row. And then imagine things coming out of the side of that. That's a basic, John. That's what I tried to get across. I'll have to try to come up with a better way of explaining it, maybe for Dick. Because it's hard to, I think he's got it, but it's hard to talk over the air. Dick's is worth a thousand words. Thank you, John.
Oh, absolutely right, man. So it's like a railroad setup, and you're fixing it. Now, this one that's going to be a blow-up module, an air-filled chamber, is that going to be sticking out on a right angle from one of these modules, like the Hominy module, or is it be attached in series with one of the rest of them?
Yeah, no, it's not going to be in series, no, I know what you mean, yeah, that's definitely coming out on the side of probably Tranquility, another, you know, that other node where the cupola is, where all the windows are, you know, that's definitely not in series, no, I saw Dick was trying to get at that too, you know, it's supposed to take blows, you know. You can't get in front of it, behind it yet. But no, that's going to be up to the side. You know, you got this long one, like you said, like a train, like I just like described. That's a good word, like a train from the caboose all the way to the locomotive. But coming out of the sides of all these, the train, you know, you've got all these other modules sticking out, and that would be one of them. Yeah, that's right, John.
Okay, now I'm getting a better picture of how this thing is laid out. Now, I've seen photographs of it, but I didn't understand it didn't have these little arrows indicating what compartments are what. When you look at that thing, it's ugly. It's an ugly-looking thing. I'm glad it's not in my yard, to be sure, but it's amazing when you talk about those solar panels and the rails they had to put up to support them, and somebody had to put all that crap together. A lot of work.
Yeah, I think it was over 30 shuttle missions. I don't know how many Russian flights took Y flights. There were, 34, 35, I think, for them. It's just incredible. But, yeah, to me, it looks great because I can appreciate what they got. You know, it looks very neat. In other words, a long run, a bunch of, connecting modules. And out of the sides of those, you've got a couple of other modules. But out of one of the nodes comes up, and it's not a module at all. It's just, you know, connected to it. And that's where you get this truss, this interconnecting, aluminum, titanium joints, you know, all these right angle brackets all connected, these big trusses. And then, you know, out of the top of that, you know, it's called the Z1, and that's like the main piece, like the header that comes off of this one module. And then, you know, instead of running the length of the train, you know, make an X, and that's the run of this truss, and that's like 11 sections long, and then from there you've got all your radiators, you get rid of the heat, and then you've got all your solar panels coming off of that. It's well designed. It looks terrible because, you know, the close-up view looks terrible, but you look at a diagram, it's really laid out good.
Yeah, I've seen actually more pictures of the inside. There was a woman on there who had a went through and a cameraman followed her. And she'll know that it's important. So I had a great view of all of the interior, but there wasn't really a great view of the exterior and from different angles. So you could actually get a 3D concept of what it was like. But yeah, it's what a great thing. So all of us out there working on this thing, you've got to be proud of that. A lot of work.
Yeah, you know what I wish I had? You know, when I was a kid, you used to have all the plastic models we used to put together, you know, of, you know, battleships and aircraft carriers and things like that. That's what they should have, you know, the, something where you could put it together in your house to be good for young kids today. And, you know, the space station, you don't see that around. In other words, you would think you would have some kind of a layout where, you know, you put all the pieces together and you put it on your desk, and that would really be cool. But you think somebody would be putting that out, you know, for kids to put together.
I would think that Revell or one of those companies would make that. I did not know that it wasn't. I thought you could get that model. And, yeah, I would build one of those and hang it here and it would made it. That's my stuff. I did a lot of those types of models. Submarines, aircraft carriers, all that stuff. I'm surprised, really. Even the space shuttle. I think that's the easier to get a model of that. Good enough.
Yeah, you know, I'd be complete, you know, the space shuttle, the toys, or whatever. I would, you know, I'd like to see something with, you know, a million pieces to put together. I think that would be good. The same holds true for the, you know, space station. You know, I really haven't looked for that, but, I mean, you think, you know, I've been in a lot of stores. I should have come across something like that, but I haven't. But that would be good, you know, a desktop model. I remember they had that for the Apollo spacecraft, and I've got a little model here of the LEM, you know, the bottom section and the top section, all the different parts, and, I mean, I got a real model I glued together years ago, and that's really cool. I mean, that's what you need, you know, that a picture's worth a thousand words, especially a 3D picture, you know, a real model. KC2 WGB, WS2M.
I was always impressed when I went into any of the Air Force offices and see the models that they had sitting on their desk or hanging on a wall. Those were really beautiful models. And I wonder what they do with them, like when they move the other. I wonder if there's someplace they keep them. They'll probably throw them out. Somebody's killed to have those models.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I got the Saturn V. I've got the LEM. I've got the first Pathfinder, that small one that landed on Mars, the Sojourner with a, was about the size of a microwave. I got a nice model of that. But then, I don't know, you can't get anything after that. I haven't seen anything on Opportunity or Spirit, no models. No models on Curiosity. I don't know. What can I tell you? Yeah. The internet is okay, but it's nice to have a 3D thing looking at you.
Yeah, it gives children something to do and some interest in life rather than staring at the computer. You put a model together, you know, that teaches you a lot, plus you learn. I mean, look at how serious they were with modeling when our secrets in construction were given out by the dimensions of the scale model. The Russians copied them. This is great stuff.
Oh, yeah, they did that with the space shuttle, too. What are you going to do? And my grandkid comes up. He's 11 years old, and he likes to play with a LEM, you know, because I have a way you can, the two parts separate. And, he might remember that when he gets older. But starting to get the idea. I'm trying to tell them there were two people inside this thing. It really landed on the moon, you know. It's a lot easier. Yeah, I mean, he likes playing with it. Where, you know, if I show him a picture in a book, what do I do with this? This isn't any fun, but he likes the model.
You know, you think about looking at that lens and the vehicle that it was mounted on top of that lens, and show that to a child. Imagine like 50 years from now, when you look back at that, it's going to be like looking back at one of the crank bones. You're going to say, what the hell was that ugly thing?
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. What do you get it though? No, I already got them family radio service radios to play with. I'm trying to start him off real young. He got pretty good with them already, too. Back to you, Dave.
Should get him a first practice oscillator. I bet you'd probably be thrilled more so. Can you imagine? I bet you the kids would fly with it. The kids were really quick.
Well, today I had him. He's got A and B down on my paddle. He got A and B. Then he got bored.
Yeah, the code you get more difficult to know. When I knew the code, I haven't used the code in my 3rd year. I remember very little of it, and sometimes I tune and I listen to it, and I have trouble discerning the dash of the spot. And I'm listening to slow code, creeping code, and I just can't do it. So I have to pay more attention to it. I'd like to get back into it. It was fun when I did it. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. I try to do it at least once a week. But, you know, I've got the straight key hooked up in power also with two. Play around with that once in a while. Good to say key night or a demonstration. Someone comes over, they recognize that. They'll recognize the straight key. They don't know what they're looking at when they see paddles.
Well, and I never used a paddle. I always used a straight key. You know, Smith found it, and it was a Western Electric key. It was really a lot of respect for those operators.
I'm starting to lose you, John. I only got about 20% of that. You had a lot of admiration for people with the straight keys, I think, years ago. The paddles, yeah, I love the paddles. I mean, once I got used to that, that was it. You know, that was the way to go. So, I use the MFJ. It's good. I don't know how you're copying me, John. I'm starting to lose you. WS2M.
Is this any better, Paul? Okay, yeah, I just turned the power up a little bit because I'm going through the Eastern Lake. Well, what I was saying is, like, the railroad operators, some of them could actually send code while they were listening to the other receiver, and they could be writing down that code while they're sending another code. It's fantastic, those guys were.
That's good. I mean, never tried anything like that. I mean, I can carry on a conversation with my wife and still listen to the code, you know, because I'm going back and forth. Some of the code that's coming in, it's, you know, when they're sending something that, you know, it's not as, you know, it's part of the system, you know, they'll be sending in, you know, their call letters, and I've already gotten their call letters written down, and, you know, I don't need to listen to that, and I could hear it. I could be listening to something else at the same time, so I guess it's not too far away from what they were doing.
a lot of the guys, well, you do so much, you probably have the same method. If they don't really hear the code, they hear words. Are you at that level?
Oh, yeah. I never thought I would be, but, you know, that's exactly what happened. You know, I mean, little words, but I'm, you know, if it's a big word, well, you know, if they start doing something that might be a common word, might be a little bit bigger than I would think. You know, I'd start to get it. You know, like, especially if they're sending a state, you know, abbreviations. It's just an abbreviation of a word, so. But I mean, regular words, you know, like just or the or soon or next. You know, yeah, I'll hear that as a word.
Well, it's like I can tell when my generator's set right by different tones and stuff automatically. I don't even have to look at them. And I guess, you know, you get the same acuity. The audio system, when you're listening to that, if you listen to it long enough. I found it fascinating, but I never got to where, I believe I told, like, you know, Johnny Cash, 60 words a minute. That's, like, phenomenal. But they do it. And when you get to those levels that I'm talking about, it just sounds like a constant battering with the key. I don't know how they can discern all of that. It's just incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got up to my 20 words for the test, and I was happy with that. But if I could go just beyond that, but comfortably I'm listening, you know, like W1AW sends their bulletins at 18 words. I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, I'm lucky if I could probably do like 3 words a minute. And I'd have to have the graph and the chart in front of me.
You know, you got to do it every day. It's not every day, but, you know, once a week. And then you get it. You'll get it back. Then on field day, I'll always, you know, they have bulletin that comes to court. You can get it on voice. You can get it on TextNet, you know, the RIDB or whatever it is. Well, I slipped it on CW. I'll copy it down. And I will tape it, and then if I miss a word or two, I'll go back to the tape. But, that's 18 words a minute. That's a real challenge, because that's like, you know, 10, 15 minutes straight.
Have you with all confidence?
No. I'm missing Antarctica. And, of course, now we got China. So, Australia I got. So, I'm into Europe, Asia, which would be, you know, Russia and all those places, no problem. Japan, got that. And the only thing I'm really missing, and I look for it all the time, they always have the DX thing come out. Antarctica. No, I don't have that.
Have you ever heard Antarctica?
Never. I've looked for them. You know, they'll put it on, you know, that they're going to be on QRV at a certain time or whatever, a certain band. No. I mean, if I did, I'd be trying like heck to get them.
Yeah, I imagine where you're located, should have a good shot. If you could hear them, you might be able to hit them, but I've never heard them either. And I've tried when they said they were broadcasting, and I couldn't hear them. So, that's another adventure.
Both my dipoles, I run 40 and 80. Years ago, I had 20 and 80. 20 was better, the DX. But even then, I ran them. You know, where they're, you know, it's good for the east and west. And then I used to have a 10-meter homebrew two-element beam. I used to face it down south. I used to get into South America a lot. So I used to do it that way. And that would have been the way to go. You know, I need a, what I really need is a 20-meter beam where I could face it south to probably get Antarctica and then be on at the right time. That ain't gonna happen. I'm happy with my dipoles where they are. But even now they run, you know, I'm going out to the east and west. So, I mean, I'll be in Russia, and, you know, Europe, and Hawaii and all, but to even get to South America now is hard with 40 and 80.
I wonder if those QRP people, those crazy people, I wonder if they prefer condiments with QRP. Do you know?
I don't know.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
ZDP Mobile. What does that mean to me? Obviously, it means to you that you want to talk to me, otherwise you wouldn't have come back. Tired to care. Didn't even look. I know there was something on the Southern State Parkway at Merrick Ave eastbound and something by the Lincoln Tunnel, and that was about it. I'm also too tired to care. What have you gotten up to in your travels? Just about to come up the Hempstead Turnpike. On the watcher? Oh. On my block. Okay, so we're parallel to each other. I'm on my way up to Hempstead Turnpike also, which means I'll be able to tell you what the traffic's like. Yeah, looks that way. Looks that way. That is until such time as you allow your heavy foot to get ahead of me. And I really don't care if you do. I'll let you pave the way for me. I don't have a heavy foot. I drive well within the norms of, you know, acceptable speed travel. Okay, you say so.